People are very cautious and sacred about who they let in their inbox. There's no better way to have that person get to know you than to send them a direct message in that medium. And autoresponders, a follow-up series, really just automates that process for you.
All right, it's time for another episode of Grow the Dream today.
If you're being invited into somebody's inbox, please treat with care.
Behave yourself in there. We're going to talk about everything to do with email, and we have a special guest.
We do. Looking forward to it.
It's going
to
be a great show. Coming up next.
Welcome to the most indispensable show for people doing the hard work of growing your business. It's the marketing podcast by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Welcome to Grow the Dream.
All right, welcome to episode 56 of Grow the Dream Show, Rod. There's nobody to sing a jingle today.
No, there isn't. I'm not sure we can actually do the show appropriately now.
I know, although I guess you could argue we haven't had an appropriate jingle for a while.
Well, that's the truth, yeah. Josh.
I know. We are going to have fun today making fun of Josh because he is not here, and he apparently has a scheduling conflict. So, you know, I hate it when that happens.
Air quotes.
So, but in his stead, we have a millennial with us. I don't know how this happened. We didn't plan it this way, but Tom Tate from AWeber is here with us. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great. You know, despite having a lot of gray in this beard, I am by definition a millennial.
So I see. Okay. Well, I'm not going to ask you for, you know, the specifics on that, sure. But
just for the record, Tom, I am definitely okay with gray.
Oh yeah, me too. Absolutely.
As you might be able to tell,
I would take any any hair myself.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. So
I should just be grateful for what I have, I guess.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I enjoyed it while it lasted, but it's gone now. I gave up the charade.
You used it up quickly.
I did. Yeah. So we are excited about having you here today, Tom, because you know, one of the things that we always set out to do on this show is help explain technology and explain marketing stuff and help people get the most out of it. And there is an area that I feel like a lot of marketers just ignore because it's been with us for so long. Of all of the marketing technologies, I think it could be one of the oldest. It predates the web.
Well, as far as digital marketing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean, like digital marketing technologies. Yeah. It predates the web. I think it actually predates me.
She's really old.
I know that spam is not older than me, but email I think is. So we're going to talk about email today. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, I really am too. I'm looking forward to it because I think that we get caught up oftentimes with the shiny object syndrome, and social media is the shiny object syndrome, although shiny objects are kind of fun and attractive too. So there's obviously a big value in social media. But I think that because of that, sometimes we overlook the tried and the true and the effective. And so that so many I know of our listeners and clients should all be doing email grabs, should be creating email lists, should be curating those, and then using them effectively. So I'm really looking forward to what Tom has to say to get us up to speed on how we should be most effectively doing that in 2016.
Yeah, so
absolutely,
that's one of the reasons we invited you. But before we get into, you know, all of the email stuff, let's just get to know you for a minute. I know that you haven't spent your entire career at AWeber, and I'm not sure how long you're there now, Tom.
Sure.
So let's talk about, you know, kind of what's your background and how long have you been at AWeber and what all you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I, you know, went to college with the aspirations of being, you know, the next great American novelist, like many misguided youth do. So I studied English literature and a bit of journalism and history in college.
Oh, no, journalism's
I actually went
okay.
on to get I went on to get my master's degree in publishing, traditional publishing.
Really?
You know, of course, yeah, kind of a I don't want to say dead, but
so
but,
what year was this time?
You know, my morphing industry. So I got my master's in 2010
in publishing.
Yes.
Wow.
In publishing. Yes. Very interesting decision,
truly.
Life decision that I made, right? I ended up in digital anyways, right? So, you know, shortly after college, I began working for a digital agency, and we were primarily developers. So we were all developers. We were working with other agencies, so marketing agencies, design agencies that didn't have that development arm would partner with us to build all the awesome things that they want to build. So that gave me my digital experience and also gave me the opportunity to work with a lot of great marketing firms and a lot of great design firms in Philadelphia. So this is all, I never really strayed too far from the Philadelphia area, except my undergrad was at University of Delaware. Got into digital, fell in love with digital, even though I had like these traditional aspirations of, you know, writing books on that were printed on paper, you know, that weird thing that people buy.
They really do still buy them, amazingly.
Yeah, we still chop down trees to make them, apparently.
Yep.
It's crazy. Even though I had all these aspirations, I fell in love with digital. I fell in love with email. And then I learned, it was a surprise to me that AWeber, and AWeber has been around for 16 plus years as an email service provider. I had no idea that they were located 30 minutes from my house. You know, so here was this big kind of mammoth of an organization that's been in the industry for so long that I stumbled across amongst all the other email service providers. I had no idea that they were so close. There was a project management position that opened up at AWeber that ended up applying for. So I actually ended up as the marketing project manager at AWeber. And I told the team when I started, my goal as a project manager is to work myself out of a job.
Good.
Right? Like I want to get this team to a point where you don't need me anymore, you know? And slowly the percentage of project management that I was doing began to decrease, while the percentage of product marketing that I was doing would increase, to the point where I was essentially doing the job of a product marketing manager. And that essentially became my role here. So now I'm the product marketing manager at AWeber.
Cool.
And I'm a huge evangelist. So any opportunity I have, such as this one, you know, just to talk about how awesome email is for entrepreneurs, how awesome email is for small businesses, I just love to jump on it.
Oh, that's really great. Well, I also noticed that you guys, and this is what sparked us reaching out to you, started for the first time. I think it's the first time. I'm not aware of it. This ever been done, being done by AWeber in the past, but you guys started a podcast last year.
Yes. So the Ask Me About Email Marketing podcast is our first kind of venture into podcasting. It's been a lot of fun. So the format, we're just trying to get right. Like, I don't know how much format tweaking you guys did in the early days of your podcast, but it's definitely like something that I'm experimenting with just to get it right.
There's an evolution.
I feel like
involved.
I always will be, but
yeah. We keep having the long form versus short form discussion. You know, should we go long?
We tried
for a while to go like, let's keep it at 40 minutes, you know, and then. And then we heard from people, no, we like it when you go longer. So we, you know, we're at an hour right now. So.
Plus there's three of us and two of us have an awful lot to say. So
yeah, and the other one isn't here today. So
awesome.
Yeah. So we're excited about this. Now, of course, AWeber to me, I've had my account, I mentioned this just before we went on air, but I've had my AWeber account since 2007. I bought
it
right after the very first internet marketing conference that I ever went to. It was where I discovered that there were geeks like me who spent their time testing and measuring stuff, you know,
sure.
And I learned about copywriting and like, you know, there were some skills that I just didn't imagine existed in, you know, the real world, I picked up at this conference and everybody said, you have to have AWeber. And I always think about the strength of AWeber as autoresponders because, the other platforms that existed back then, and I know there are many more today that are on the market, and we even use some other tools, you know, which I'll just get that out now and clear my conscience. But there are other tools that have somewhat come along. But you guys, AWeber, especially back then, there was just not a better platform to handle autoresponders, and every internet marketer that I met made it clear that if you don't have autoresponders, you're not going to be effective online. And I'm amazed to this day. So here it is, 2016. So this is 10 years later. I'm amazed to this day about how many businesses do not understand the power of automated follow-up and how it works and why it works. And so that's one of the like the first things that I think we should talk about right out of the gate. Absolutely. Here is you know, what is it that you've seen, and especially now that you're so closely tied in with one of the industry leaders and pioneers in autoresponder technology.
Sure.
You know, what is it that we're missing if we don't have this tool in our bag of tricks?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that too. The history of AWeber is actually, the company was founded on the autoresponder, not just the general, you know, email newsletter, right? The broadcast. So it's pretty cool that we've had traditionally that reputation of being the go-to place for autoresponders. And it's quite frankly my favorite aspect of the product. And I'm not going to make this a product pitch, but
sure.
It's so funny to hear in 2016 to hear marketers talk about lead nurturing, a new thing.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
give it a new name.
It's
part of the
crazy.
Growth hacking, right?
Yeah. It's so funny to hear, you know, people start talking about it like it's this new revelation that they woke up one day and they were in the shower and they thought like, maybe I should nurture the relationships that I'm making online in hopes that I can make a sale.
Right.
Right.
Because nobody's had that thought before.
Yeah, it's really, you know, so when you think about marketing from even before, digital times, right? Before mm-hmm. before we had the web, before we had in the internet, you know, it was all about making relationships with specific or individuals, you know? And there's no easier way to make a relationship than to send a message directly into someone's inbox, you know, which is a very personal thing these days. People are very cautious and sacred about who they let in their inbox. So if
Definitely.
Someone's going to opt in to hear from you, they're actually saying like, I want to hear more from you, which is, you know, a blessing. There's no better way to have that person get to know you than to send them a direct message in that medium. And autoresponders, a follow-up series, really just automates that process for you. So you don't have to sit there and write an individual follow-up message for every single person. You know, you are setting up a series. I hate to say set it and forget it. That's not a phrase that I like to use because I don't think that that's the case.
Right.
I think you should build it and maintain it, test, iterate. You know, like you should always, your autoresponder series, your follow-up series should always be something that you're looking at in terms of what can I optimize?
I always tell people that every so often you need to sign up for your own autoresponder again.
Oh, it's awesome.
Just
yep.
Because it's funny the things that you know, I have done the set it and forget it thing. And
sure.
And I will admit to having told some people that, hey, you just set this up and it just, you know, and I probably even said, just forget about it. But then when you go back and you look and sometimes you're like, oh, I had no idea. I'm sending a
yep.
message that's totally out of date or whatever. But you're right. I think that people don't realize that relationship with the person who is asking you to – they're inviting you. I like that terminology, by the way. I really like that, inviting you into their inbox. That's also – not only is it a welcome thing when they're saying, okay, go ahead and stuff, but that relationship is one that can be really, really strengthened if you handle your – automated nurture sequence or whatever you want to call it correctly, but it's
sure.
also one of the fastest relationships you can burn if you don't do it right.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So you want to be careful. You don't want to oversend, obviously. And it's all about, you know, trying to qualify and get to know the people who are signing up for your list so that you can deliver them the best value. You know, but I had a conversation. I did an interview for our podcast a couple of days ago, and we're talking about brands, businesses, personalities online. They always have these great about pages on their websites that no one ever goes to. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, no one really like stumbles upon about pages as frequently as they used to back when you know, 2005. Everyone was getting into blogging. So you have the opportunity to set up a welcome message that takes the best aspects of your about page and hand deliver it to somebody. And I think that just general introduction of like, hey, you didn't know me, but now you know me, can work wonders for, you know, continuing to nurture that lead or that relationship, right?
Absolutely. I've
yeah.
seen some amazing things over the years. You know, in our own business, we are huge believers in email. And sure. I feel like it can be kind of the redheaded stepchild of a marketing program because people forget how valuable and important it can be. And in terms of return on investment, and I know this was probably one of the things that you guys have measured greatly, but in terms of return on investment, email to this day, I mean, I saw a stat recently, and I don't know, different people measure this differently, but
sure.
You know, one stat that I saw not long ago was something like $60, $65 return for every $1 you spend on email. And again, I'm not sure how that was quantified, and I didn't dig much below the surface. But it's not inconsistent with numbers I've seen in the past. And I can say that, you know, in terms of what I've seen with our own clients, I have a great story we like to share with one of our own clients who had a fantastic lead generation tool in place. And a small business, local service company, they have trucks that go out to people's houses. I mean, they do very, very hands-on stuff. And their salespeople had a fantastic lead gen tool, and they were in the habit of closing about 20% of the leads that they were getting through this particular lead gen tool. And when we added some simple, automated little touches on a schedule that that were triggered by this sequence when the person raised their hand, that closing ratio in that particular business from that lead gen tool went from 20% to almost 50% within a month of us putting that tool. So from that one channel, if you got zero additional new leads, that business, they were closing 150% more sales. Like, you know, that's from just that one, you know, one adjustment. And that's the power of little automated touches if you plan it out right. And I'm sure you guys have stories. Yeah.
I mean, it's all about your strategy, right? And just stopping to think about the holistic marketing strategy and how email fits in. And in a lot of ways, I see it as a safety net for all the traffic that's coming into your site, right? Like if you are honestly expecting the majority of your traffic to visit your site, invite, buy right away, which typically, you know, isn't the case, and then just know to come back, you know, like there are so many different ways that you can capture that traffic and nurture it. And email, I think, is one of the most valuable. But, you know, there's just, it's a lost opportunity if you're not engaging, right? Certainly there are other channels that might have a higher ROI for you, you know, if you work on it and you test it. But it's also kind of it's a low effort piece of the puzzle to put in, right, to just capture all that traffic that might otherwise just sift out.
So, Tom, in your expertise and your experience with this now, what are some of the biggest mistakes that marketers make when they are conducting an email lead generation campaign?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely start with the autoresponder, you know, just not having a welcome series set up. And when I say welcome series, that could be as simple as one email, you know, it could be two. But if you simply just send out that, you know, confirmation, welcome to my list, welcome to my newsletter or what have you. And then you are just sending your broadcasts, your one-time messages to those subscribers. You're missing out on a huge opportunity, like I said earlier, just to introduce yourself to that new subscriber. Some of the really successful welcome series that I've seen, if you have a product, you could really have a product demo over the course of maybe three emails where you talk about a specific feature of your product or service. If you're a content creator, like if you're a blogger, if you're a YouTuber, why don't you just link your top three articles or your top three videos? And that's just going to drive more traffic back to your properties and just re-engage that subscriber. You might not have anyone, like somebody might not click on those at all, but for the people who do, what you're making at that point is relational deposits into your relationship. You know what I mean?
Nice.
And I know Gary Vaynerchuk, if you guys follow Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, he, in his book, Jab, 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 Right Hook.
Yeah.
He talks a lot about this, where it's all about making the deposits before you ask for the withdrawal. Mm-hmm. You know, an email, automated email series is a great way to just make some really fantastic deposits. I'm trying to come up with a really good acronym for this, and, you know, maybe you guys can help me. But ROMU, right? So ROMUs, that's what I have so far. Okay. ROMU, and it's not great, which is why I'm trying to formulate a better one. But Relevant offers of mass utility, right?
Ooh, okay.
I think of automated emails as an opportunity for you to drop these ROMUs, these relevant offers of mass utility, on a subscriber who wasn't even ready for that, right? If you can blow away somebody with something that is going to be relevant and of massive use to them, just because you know that the type of content they were engaging with on your site had them opt in, you can kind of qualify them that way. If you can set them into a series where you're just going to give them some of your most useful content for free with no ask, and you can do that 1, 2, 3 times in a row, automate it. When it comes time to make that withdrawal, like, you're going to be in a fantastic position. You know, when you want them to try your product or service, purchase your book, whatever it is that you do to monetize your business, dropping those relevant offers along the way is a great way. So I would say the biggest mistake is either not giving someone the opportunity to get to know you better, and also not providing value before you ask for something in return.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask. So would one of the big mistakes that is done in a welcome series is to immediately ask for something, immediately make a pitch before you've created a relationship?
Yeah, I think so. And you can, and that's not to say that you shouldn't have a call to action. You know, I'm sure if I go and sign for some of A. Weber's follow-up series that we have, you know, for our own product, I'm sure that a lot of them at the bottom of the first email is, start your 30-day trial today. It's not to say that you shouldn't have the call to action in there. It just shouldn't be the basis for the right. email, right? Gotcha. It shouldn't be the main message.
Yeah,
in my opinion, I feel pretty strongly about that. So, make deposits before you make withdrawals.
I like that a lot. I think one of the things that I've run into over the years, especially with people who are new to the idea of marketing via email and creating relationships via email, one of the things that they often don't understand is why do I need a third-party tool? Like, shouldn't I be able to just put up a form on my website and drop those into a spreadsheet or whatever and then email those people from Gmail or whatever my email client or Outlook or whatever it is? And sure. And so, yeah, so how do you answer that question?
Yeah, so you can definitely do that at a very small scale. You know, so if you're getting 1 leads a week, you know, you can absolutely do that. But there are the biggest issue is deliverability, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to get flagged for spam if you're sending from your personal Gmail account to 50 to 500 emails, and there's a cap too. I forget what the actual number is these days, but Gmail won't let you send, you know, over a certain.
Yeah, there is a daily limit. A lot of people don't know it, but yeah, there is a daily limit, and you can run up against it with scripts too, which I found out.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, it's, you know, there is a cap, but you know, one of the things that we really pride ourselves in here is our deliverability, and that comes from 15 plus years of building relationships, you know, with different ISPs. And really working on our infrastructure to make sure that we're keeping spam out. Because every time that someone signs up for an ESP and sends spam, they're hurting the sending reputation of all the good guys using their service. You know, so not just AWeber, but all of the ESPs, it's in our best interest to keep spam out. Because it helps the reputation of everybody. So that would be the main reason, I would say. But then the other, you know, main reason too, like, you want to make sure your emails hit the inbox, so deliverability is important.
Absolutely. I mean, you're going through the trouble of creating the content, you know, why send it if it's not going to get to the destination?
If it's not going to hit the box, right?
Yeah.
So I totally, you know, support that as the number one reason. But the other thing is automation, you know, so like, you can't really set up an autoresponder with your personal Gmail account. But for all marketers, you know, there are a lot of marketers who live and die by the metrics, and there are a lot who don't, right? But you still need them. You still need to be able to refer to your statistics when needed. So when you sign up with an ESP like AWeber, you're going to get click tracking, open tracking. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to get the statistics that are going to say who's opening emails, what links are they clicking on, you know, what's the overall rate. Of those things, so that you can continue to optimize your campaigns. You know, otherwise you're just sending it out into the ether assuming that people are opening it, and you don't necessarily know how they're responding, right? Some of the statistics is huge.
Yeah, some of the most powerful data that I ever come across in marketing comes from, especially when there's an established list that I'm sending to, and mm-hmm. you know that this list opens my emails at a rate of just, you know, let's say 30%. But when I wrote this particular subject line, you know, it only 20% opened it. Or when I wrote that other one, you know, 50% opened it, you know. So it's like some of the most powerful data that you're ever going to find in terms of what people actually respond to, you know, what they're interested yep. in, you know.
Well, it's the same concept, you know, with a tweet, basically. You know, you send out sure. some tweets that you get one or two retweets and a couple likes, and you send out another one, similar topic, whole different tweet, though, words-wise, and a similar topic, and it could make it 30 or 40 retweets, you know,
yeah.
in a 24-hour period.
I totally agree, and same with that Twitter analogy. Time of day is huge, right?
Big
so,
time.
You know, considering what time you send a specific broadcast or a specific tweet might also show that jump. So if you don't have that data to kind of stimulate the right questions, you'll never be able to inform decisions for future campaigns.
Do you find in general that there's optimum times of day to send out an email to?
The million-dollar question right here.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and it's going to vary. It's really going to vary based on your audience, which is why you need to test these things. I did hear some good advice last year. Surprisingly, I'd never really heard this before, and I never thought about it this way before. But if on your opt-in form, if your email field label is business email address, you actually increase the rate of getting someone entering their business email address.
Interesting.
And then you know that you can send to them during that kind of early business hours, right?
Okay,
their
that's
time
smart.
Zone. And you can assume that they're getting into the office. This is an assumption, right? But it's worth testing. You can assume that they're getting into the office, they're checking their email, and you're catching them in a business mindset, you know, where they're in their inbox interacting with other business emails. So if you're promoting a product or a service that relates to someone's business, that's a great way to make sure that you're not getting their personal email address, sending it to them during business hours.
That's excellent.
They're ignoring it because they're on the job, you know, they're on the clock. And then, you know, maybe they're interacting with it at 9 p.m. when they're going through their personal stuff. And at that point, they're not in a mode to respond the way that you would want them to in a business setting.
That's a very interesting tidbit. I for years kind of defaulted to saying your primary email address, you
sure.
know, as a way to kind of make sure that they don't give me their crap one, you know, that,
yeah.
that hey,
because yeah,
they're just trying to get my free download or whatever. And so, you know, now yep. they're giving me that Yahoo email account that they haven't opened in 10 years, you know. So even
yep.
though they can still do whatever they want to, sometimes with just a little subtle suggestion, you say, hey, give me your primary email address, you know. And of course, some of that is you have to build up. My emails are going to be important, the things I'm going to send you after
sure.
this. But I like that idea about your business email, especially for B2B. I'm going to test that.
that's
a good
excellent.
One.
It's worth testing. And I would say test it because you might see a decrease in conversion rate, right?
Sure. Yeah, and you got
to
know.
That might be asking too much for some people, and that's important to note. So you might have to weigh the pros and cons because you might see a decrease in email submissions, but knowing that they might be more qualified, you might be willing to accept that 5 yeah. or 10% decrease, depending upon what it is. Right?
Especially if they're more qualified, which you may find out later, you know, and at the end, your conversion rate
sure
goes
thing.
Up or something, you know. So one of the questions that always, of course, comes up with mail, in addition to things like, okay, you know, what should we do once we get an email address and you know, how should we think about, you know, that process and the systems around it? What are some of your favorite ways to get people to give up their email address?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. I actually started a personal project where my incentive to join my list was every week I was going to give away a $5 Starbucks gift card.
Oh.
So it's interesting, right? Because some people are willing to go pay $6 to $10 per lead.
Sure.
With Facebook advertising or some other thing. And I thought, you know, this is a personal project, a hobby almost. I'm not willing to pay that much lead, but I am willing to spend $5 a week, you know, and just give somebody a cup of coffee. And I ended up getting like 60 subscribers in the first week.
Hey.
Just through like promoting through some personal channels. So it was really surprising to me that like I didn't have a PDF, I didn't have an ebook, I didn't have a checklist, like I didn't have any like asset other than the promise of some good content and of the potential to win a $5 Starbucks gift card. So like you can get creative with it that way. You know what I mean? Like that's one thing. But really I think it's all about finding out why people are on your property in the first place. Trying to get to the source of what they're looking for, and then offer them a strong incentive that you've got it, right? And I always tell people to start small in the sense of, so here, I'll break it down into like three tiers, right?
Okay.
So you can start really small and just say, you know, sign up for my email list, get the top 5x, right? Top 5 secrets to a winning YouTube video, right?
Okay.
Say you're a YouTube marketer. Top 5 secrets to a winning YouTube video. That might be a blog post that you've already written, right?
Sure.
That might not be any new content. That might be content that you already had. So I would say start with repurposing content you already have into something like that. So when somebody opts into that specific list, you will just redirect them to that blog post. You know,
okay.
You don't have to do anything other than have the thank you page, you know, also redirect to that blog post. So that's an easy way to just test, right? People are coming looking for YouTube tips. You're going to give them 5 secrets. So the curiosity has been piqued, you know, so then, you know, see if people will jump in with that. The next thing I like to suggest is going one step further and producing a piece of content that specifically serves as a lead magnet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, they default to, oh, I have to write the canonical 50-page ultimate guide to YouTube marketing ebook. But what they don't realize is that, you know, maybe a brand like HubSpot already has that canonical 50-page ebook. You know what
Leave
I mean?
Leave it
like,
to HubSpot, man. It's true. Yeah, like, yeah, they've already created it. Whatever it is, they've already got it. Yeah,
Somebody's already created that. And for better or worse, that person has more credibility than you. You know what I mean? So I think before you go and spend your, yeah, I mean, may or may not have more credibility than you, but
I'm kidding. No, go ahead.
They certainly might have more traffic than you. So
that they do. Yeah.
Before you go out of your way to either do it yourself, which is a huge undertaking, outsource the writing, the design, the creation, whatever. Why not just start with something like a one-page checklist, you know, and you'd be shocked that your traffic would actually be more interested in the quick and dirty checklist, which actually might provide more utility. And you can make it unique to you and specifically unique to the experience that your customer or your prospect is having on page. But start with something like midway there. And then as you develop the kind of clout and your list begins to grow, that's when I think that you can test creating larger pieces of content. White papers, you know, larger research type of pieces or ebooks. And I find that they work best when you're in a very specific niche, right?
Mm.
So if it's something really broad like YouTube marketing, you know, it's someone else probably has already done it. But if you're in a specific niche and you have the opportunity to really produce that canonical piece of content, and you are the go-to source for all things, whatever it is, you should begin to think about investing in that. But I would say start with your kind of subscriber acquisition. Start smaller before you spend a lot of time and money kind of building that up.
So I just want to encourage you that your appropriate use and pronunciation of canonical several times shows that your literature degree did not go to waste.
Yeah, so I'm a millennial that was born, should have been born in a different era.
I love it.
Yeah, well done.
Well, we geeks have had to learn the term canonical in the last few years because of canonical URLs.
Oh, well, see, what do I know?
SEO.
Absolutely.
It's all part of the SEO game.
I just take it from Canon.
That's fun. So I like the advice that you're sharing a lot here with respect to, you know, what might the leads already be interested in that might be willing to sign up and give them something, perhaps start small and then grow from there. One of the things that I might add to that, which I think is fun, is that we used to really strongly work with a lot of clients to build a lead magnet. And, you know, the theory was, and I think to a great degree, this is still valid in a lot of cases. You create something that you would sell. Like, people would find it so valuable they would actually pay you for it and then give it to them, you know. But what we found a lot of times is that people, through various means that we use, we found people didn't actually often read the content. You know, it's one thing to get somebody to sign up for your list, and it's another thing, you know, they're going to save it. They're going to stick it on their desktop, where I probably have 60 PDFs sitting on my desktop right now that I plan to read someday, which, of course, is never going to happen. But
guaranteed.
But what we found is that because of the relevance question, which you brought up a few minutes ago with your autoresponder sequence, right? Your welcome nurture sequence, whatever you call that first few touches that you create. What we found is that we would take the contents of the lead magnet, the PDF, the free report, the whatever, and send it out in little bite-sized nuggets as part of the welcome series.
Awesome.
And people would say, "Oh, well, they just read that." No, they probably didn't. You know, and
that's a great assumption that people are not reading those larger pieces. So, you know, if you're a photographer, instead of writing the ebook on, you know, how to do X in photography, why don't you test out 50 stock images, you know, like a 50 stock image pack. And then there's like immediate utility, you know what I mean? That people can use right away. And it has no, it's a deposit, right? It's a relational deposit. That you can almost guarantee someone's going to use rather than just have a PDF in their downloads folder.
Since you brought it up a minute ago, HubSpot actually has a 300 stock image pack that they've
awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, as long as we're saying, hey, HubSpot has done it bigger than us. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Right. So I wanted to ask,
but you know what marketers have that HubSpot doesn't have, is a uniqueness and an authenticity, you know, that you can really play up on your site and the way you carry yourself in different social networks. I love HubSpot, but you know, like, they are HubSpot.
Yeah.
So when you're out there marketing yourself, really don't take for granted your authenticity and your uniqueness, because even though you have a 30 image pack versus a 300 image pack, you have special qualities that a larger corporation doesn't have.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a misstep that a lot of people make in email too, where they don't let themselves shine through. And honestly, your email is only as effective as your content is in it. So making sure that your content is a unique representation of you.
That really sounded a lot like content is king. What I heard.
Is that an ongoing feud?
Yes.
Here? Yeah, we've had that discussion once or
not
twice.
A feud so much as much as just a constant and total misunderstanding between the boomer and the millennial.
Actually, I think it is a feud, Tom. I would go with feud on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, Tom, because I'm on blogs. Sure. We had a guest on earlier, and Dave will get his name out. But I had the data that showed how much stickier the long form blogs are. You know, you do, the, I mean, you know, 3, 4, 5,000 words, and those over time, you know, when it's good content, but they actually will do better over a long period of time. Is there any way in which that relates to an email marketing campaign beyond just simply linking to that? How would that work? Because you were just talking about how, you know, do the shorter pieces, which makes a ton of sense to me, particularly within an email, or for wanting to introduce people to you a little bit and create that relationship. But what about down the road when you're still curating and using that email list to continue to expand the relationship? What about the longer form?
I mean, I think longer form absolutely has its place, and it's going to depend on your audience. You know, like, if your audience is a bunch of millennials who want to consume super short form content, they just don't have time for 1500 words a day of reading, then you probably will see your statistics and, you know, your engagement reflect that. So I think it's important to know your audience, and I think it's important to, again, just be very mindful of the utility that you're providing. If you are sending long form content either by email or, you know, just using email to drive back to your long form content on your blog, you know, still using best practices to make sure that you have very captivating headings, and you're using headings and pull quotes and all these different things, so that even though it's a longer piece, people can still extract value out of it. I think that's the key, right? The key is value. So, you know, whether you're delivering that through email or your blog, as long as you're making it very apparent what the value is, I think that that is going to work, you know, long form versus short form. I think short form emails that tease a long form piece of content is a great strategy. You know, so sending a short email that just, you know, carries that traffic over to your longer form piece of content is a really great way to drive traffic.
So let me ask you, is this a reasonable way to picture this? If you look at sometimes perhaps your email as like a headline and a drop head, and your long form as the content of the story, and you're looking to just grab people's attention right away, get their interest, and then get them into the full content that you want to provide to them.
I think it's a great strategy. So the first step there is actually getting the email opened, right? So
right,
getting a strong subject line, you know, would be your first line of attack there. Derek Halpern is from Social Triggers. He's one of my favorite thought leaders in marketing. And he talks about the information gap, which is to have a gap of information between the subject line and the content of the email so that you pique someone's curiosity. You know, you're just playing off of human psychology at that point. So an example would be, you won't believe this this secret trick that boosted my ROI 300%, right? Like it's when I read that subject line, I need to know what the secret trick is. I don't know like anything other than there's a secret, right? And right. I need to know what it is.
It sounds like a BuzzFeed headline.
I was going to say, it's clickbait. It's clickbait.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that works.
It is, right?
It does work. That's why they use it. It
works. Yeah. And it's worth testing. And it shouldn't be scammy, right? Because,
right.
You know, like.
Because then you ruin your relationship.
Yeah. Like when I do click through, I expect him to tell me the secret.
Yeah. I need you to deliver on your promise.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm not promoting clickbait in the sense of don't deliver, but, you know, step one, get that subject line clickable. And then when you get in there, you know, really tease out content, right? You know, give a good, strong lead. And then maybe give a couple bullet points of like, you know, here's what you'll learn. You know, like, here's what you're going to take away from this. Don't give it all away, but give them enough, again, that you're almost really begging that, not begging that, but you're making it impossible for them to not want to get the full context, you know?
And a lot of that is like all of like hyper-relevance, like you said earlier. I mean, the more you know about your prospects and what they're interested in, and especially if you've set up some qualifiers, like the lead magnet itself qualifies some people out, they're not going to be interested in it, you know? So you have some signals along the way, hopefully, if you set it up strategically, you have some signals along the way to know what they're going to be interested in, and that allows you to do some of this. So how do you feel about the idea? I mean, you mentioned that the idea that millennials don't tend to consume as much maybe bigger content.
They have short attention spans.
Okay, I wasn't trying to say that, but you know.
Present company excluded.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't make that assumption that we all have shorter attention spans, but I think we definitely live in a time where attention is, it's hard to come by. And when you have somebody's attention, you really need to make the most of
the truth.
Attention.
Yep. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because you're lucky, right? If you get someone's attention for 5 to 6 seconds, you're really in a great position these days. So you need to make the most out of that 5 to 6 and then turn that 5 to 6 into 30 to 60. And then maybe turn that 30 to 60 into 4 or 5 minutes, right?
So how do you feel about content then? Let's say you have a steady stream of articles that you're pushing out to your email list because they're interested in, you know, news or updates or whatever it is about your niche. What do you think about the idea that maybe one or two of your bullet points, you know, with that gap that you talked about, gap to, from the subject line to the content, and then maybe one or two short items, and then, read the rest of this article or a click here so that you drive them back to your site. How do you feel about that strategy in general?
In my opinion, that's the move, right? Because the action is happening on your site. The site is your gateway to all your other things, your products, your services, your other content, other offerings that you might have. You're going to get better analytics on your site, right? So you're going to get average time on page, bounce rate. You know, like there's all these fun analytics that you're going to get.
Like scroll depth or heat maps or, you know, other things.
Scroll data. If you're not using UTM parameters in your emails, so that you can track all this behavior in Google Analytics, please Google UTM parameters and try to start incorporating that into your email campaigns. Because you know what you're going to get is from that email, you're not going to know how many minutes were spent reading that email because we just don't have that technology yet.
It's like podcasts, right? We don't know how long they actually listen. You know?
Yeah, you don't know. Yeah, exactly.
We can measure downloads, but we don't know when you dropped off, you know? Yeah.
Right. And that becomes a huge issue when you're trying to optimize your overall strategy and tactics. So I absolutely recommend, you know, keep people in the inbox only as long as you need to, but drive over to your main property so that you can introduce them to other things. You know, the overall user experience is probably better on your site, you know, than just in the inbox. You'll have their attention. You'll be able to measure whether your emails are being more effective. I think that's absolutely the move.
I think we should do a podcast on UTM parameters. What do you
think? He said to Google it, so I was just following the guest instructions.
Well, yeah. they own it now. You know, they bought Urchins, which was the platform, the software platform where UTMs were invented. Google.
Well, how come then the first thing that popped up on Google is Kissmetrics?
Well, that's because Google is trying to show the world. They're trying to pretend that they don't favor their own content.
Right. We would believe that for a moment.
Yeah. But that's the basis of Google Analytics is that Urchins platform. And you can still license the software itself separately. But anyway, that's just a geek moment for me because
totally.
I have to geek out on the geek stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll vouch for that Kissmetrics article though, because that's a really great introduction. Oh. So if you are listening,
Perfect.
Interested, you Google it. That Kissmetrics article is definitely a good starting
point. Well, see, you've read it. That means it's sticky on Google too,
that's
and
sticky.
It's and it's got yep. you know why it's got great content.
It's probably 2,000 words or 3,000 words. We have to look at it. Yeah,
see?
Now the OCD in the publisher, the editor over there is going to make.
It's full of graphics.
Yeah. Oh, shiny stuff.
Shiny objects. Yes.
Shiny stuff.
Yeah, we like those. So that's really fun. So I think, I mean, you know, in terms of giving a business who might not have, you know, maybe invested a lot of time or energy into email, I think we've hit some of the major points here. You know, you've got to have.
Oh my gosh! Look at that time. Wow.
I know.
This has been great. This has just flown by.
You got to think about, you know, how you attract people to sign up. You got to think about what value you deliver in the. Whatever it is that they signed up for, and then certainly the welcome series, all that stuff. I love your thoughts about creating relationships and delivering value. All of that stuff is really good.
They're inviting you into their inbox.
That's
love that because it gives a whole different depth of responsibility to how we should be approaching it.
Yeah, and absolutely. I also appreciate the revisiting Gary Vaynerchuk's ideas about deposits into the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we definitely should talk about, and I know you're not here to pitch AWeber per se, but you guys have because I always think about AWeber as sort of the innovators where autoresponders and lead nurturing are concerned,
sure.
even though that wasn't the
yep.
language being used. You guys did some stuff here several months ago now to really innovate along those lines, because for a long time, the AWeber product was just the gold standard in terms of setting up autorespond. I mean, you know, like for example, before I let you answer the question I asked,
I
loved my AWeber account because I could put up a different offer on different pages on my site, and it was so stupid simple to go set up an automated sequence that was just for that offer, right? Some of the other systems that I had tested out, especially back in 2007 when I was getting started with this stuff, you know, there was one sequence. If you were going to send any automated follow-up, it was one sequence no matter how they signed up. And it's like,
sure.
Well, that makes no sense. You know, I need to send specific follow-up based on what they asked for, you know? So
but
you guys have done some innovating. So can you talk about like some of the more recent developments on the platform and how that's affecting things for businesses?
Yeah, so we introduced campaigns, which is kind of the next evolution in follow-ups for us here at AWeber. And it's really just the starting point for a lot of really innovative and awesome stuff that we want to do with automation in 2016.
Cool.
So we released this in October, in beta in October of last year. And really the premise of it right now is, so AWeber has always been a list-based it basically a list-based account, right? So
right.
When you add subscribers to a list, you would add them to separate lists based on segments or interests, right? So, you know, let's say I have an animal. I'll use a very terrible example. Let's say I have an animal blog. If I'm on a blog post about cats and I have a lead magnet about cats, they would opt in and they would go into a cats list. Or dogs, they would go into a dogs list, right? Now with campaigns, you have the opportunity to have them all go into the same list, right? So that you can manage your subscribers all in one list. But you can send them the relevant content the same way that you used to be able to, but now in a more dynamic way. So you can welcome campaigns for all of your lead gen, for all of your lead magnets on relevance, right? So cat series, dog series, and then you can daisy chain that into a main campaign so that when they finish their initial campaign, they all get entered into the same campaign, same lead nurturing campaign, right? So you can send the custom relevant content first, and then you can maybe tailor it off with some more generic content, more about you. And then you can all manage them within the same list, right? So it's moving more towards, and then you can tag them as well, right?
Okay, so then I have a more global view of any given subscriber, because like in historically with my AWeber account, I knew this because I was watching, and so I would know that maybe somebody had signed up for five of different lists, but I had to actually go look at each list in order for me to see where they were, right? So yes.
That record of that subscriber and the different lists, that record is not talking to each other, right? So you don't have that global view to say that, like, you know, Rod, for example, likes digital marketing, traditional marketing, and publishing. You know, like, he would be in three separate lists.
Exactly.
I couldn't look at one record of Rod to say, like, here are all the things that he's tagged with. And now with campaigns, you're able to do that, right? So we're going to be able to create better subscriber management, better tagging and segmenting, more powerful automation. So one of the big things that we're really excited about is kind of click-based triggering, you know, so that if you do engage with a certain piece of content
in
an email, you are going to be tagged with that. You know, like you are going to be able to set up a tag on the back end as an AWeber user.
And then will that tag drive like further automation from there?
And that can drive further automation.
Sweet.
So you can qualify that subscriber, you know, just by being able to say that this subscriber likes clicking on long form content, you know? So like now you know that you can continue to nurture that subscriber with long form content.
Or you can send like a yes, no question out. Right? Like you can say, hey, we're starting a new cat blog. I know you subscribe to our dog blog, but that rhymes. Yeah, that's fun. Dog blog. I know you subscribe to our dog blog, Rod. How would you like to be get our cat info too? And he can click yes or no. And now I can tag him with a yes, he has cats too or whatever. But I don't have to send him back to the site, fill out a new form, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's historically what I would have had to have done, right?
That's what you would have had. He would have had to have opted into a form, or you would have to have moved that person manually over, which is a laborious process. So, you know, the basis for campaigns is marketers are getting more and more sophisticated year after year. And we want AWeber to be a tool that empowers you and enables you to do the level of sophistication that you want. In a very simple way, you know, like we want you to be able to do complex, sophisticated things using a very simple interface. So our goal is to take the simplicity and the ease of use with our autoresponders and follow-ups, and then move that into a platform where you can do more complex, sophisticated things, but without all the headaches of, you know, trying to work with a complex system.
Love it.
So we're really excited with kind of the genesis of it. We're excited with how beta is going. We're getting a lot of good feedback. We are beginning to roll out the tagging functionality this month.
Cool.
And then, you know, the next big thing is going to be kind of this click-based trigger. I don't have an ETA for that, so don't hold me to anything, but I'm that's where I'm most excited for, because that's where the fun happens. I call that funnel magic, right? So like if you have someone in a funnel and you can kind of get them to do these kind of dynamic shifts in the content that you're serving them with just a click of a button, to me, that's like magic, you know? So
I love it.
Really looking forward to it.
All right. So when you guys were sending out some of the emails back in October about, hey, this, we're doing this big announcement, this big reveal, do more with email. I remember this email campaign you guys sent, and I want to know if it's available yet for me to do this. And I think I already know what the answer is, but I'm going to ask anyway, because it was the baddest thing I'd ever seen done in email. And so you guys sent this campaign out, and it had a live Twitter feed in it. So you had the hashtag do more with email. And so I got the email campaign. I have a picture of it on my screen right now, Rod, so you can see what I'm talking about.
I see it.
But we'll link out to this. It was the coolest thing. So then I'm like, well, I want to be in that email, you know? So I tweeted something about do more with email, and I went back to my Gmail account, reopened your campaign, same campaign, and there was my tweet. That was so slick.
Amazing, right? Yeah. It's like, it was like magic. So I'm going to give a shout out to one of our email designers, Kelsey. Kelsey is the designer that implemented that. And we're using Aweber with no craziness. So you can do it. I'm not sure if we ever break the time to document exactly how to do it. So maybe
I was gonna say, man, a GitHub repo.
We don't have any interface or way to just like jump in and do it right now, but I should have the team document it just because of how awesome it is, so that if you find the use case for it and you want to use it, that you can go in and do that.
Kelsey, you rock. All right, so if you have a GitHub repo or you want to create one or whatever, we'll make noise about it, because that was just the slickest thing. And of course, we should say it's risky, right? Because you never know what's going to show up. I'd love to know if she had any filtering or anything else in there. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but anyway, that was a really slick. That was such a slick trick.
That's very clever.
So,
I'll get some tips and tricks on how to do that for sure.
I love it. I love it. Now, I'm sure you guys have an opt-in or something that you would love to drive our listeners to, and so I'd love for you to share, like, what's the best way for someone who's interested in Aweber to learn more.
Yeah. So if you go to, honestly, I'm going to just say go to the blog, right? So if you go to blog.aweber.com, that's where you're going to see some of the great content that we're producing. And, you know, when you're perusing, you are going to get prompted for opting in for some of our
really
quote unquote lead magnets, right? So we do like to practice what we preach and deliver value in exchange for your email address. But yeah, I would definitely say check out blog.aweber.com. The content is super relevant, regardless of what level of experience you're at. We're putting out a podcast once a week. So that's Ask Me About Email Marketing.
That was my next thing I was going to bring up. Perfect. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's been great. It started out with us kind of talking to ourselves, you know, so our customers would ask us a question, and then somebody here at Aweber would answer. But I just started interviewing external guests, which has been a lot of fun. So check out the podcast, check out the blog. When you stumble upon, you know, a prompt to get one of our PDF guides or one of our ebooks or checklists, they're all awesome. So definitely check that out. And we kind of craft each one with a reader in mind and with a lot of care. So definitely check that out.
Yeah, you guys do have great content. So what we'll do within our show notes, as we always do, we provide links and everything. So we'll link out to the Aweber blog. If any of our listeners don't already have an email service provider, and you like what you're hearing, I want to encourage you. I've been a huge fan of Aweber for a long time, so check it out. But you can also we have an affiliate link. So if you want to support Grow the Dream Show at the same time, then you are welcome to just visit growthedream.com/email. And if you hit growthedream.com/email, that'll bounce you right back over to Aweber and check out all that content that Tom's talking about. And then if you do happen to sign up down the road, you decide, hey, this is the right tool for you, then, hey, it's a way that you can just say thank you to Grow the Dream Show and show your support for us at the same time that you're getting your hands on an awesome product and getting all of the great stuff that goes along with that. So that's an option. You're certainly welcome to just go straight to aweber.com and buy directly from them or not, you know, but definitely whatever you do, sign up for the blog because it's really, really good stuff. And I haven't listened to every episode of the podcast, Tom, so I've heard a couple and I'm loving them. I knew you were on the road. And so are you going to be doing that more, traveling to events and conferences and stuff?
Yeah, we'll be at Podcast Movement this year, so we're really excited for that.
Fantastic.
So that's going to be in July in Chicago. That'll be a lot of fun. And yeah, our team typically kind of divides and conquers. So like our content team will go out to different content types of conferences. I was at Digital Marketers Traffic and Conversion Summit a couple weeks ago, and you know, the podcast squad will go to the Podcast Movement. So
fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I will say, if you are not going to use Grow the Dream Show's affiliate link and you're gonna choose not to support them, at least go, you know, leave an iTunes review or something, right?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
You gotta support the show somehow. But yeah, by all means, thanks for sharing that, and definitely support Grow the Dream Show and use that affiliate link. We would love to have you try us. It's currently a 30-day trial, so it's risk-free on your end.
Yeah, love it, and you're gonna find it's a fantastic experience. I've enjoyed the upgrades you guys have made over the years, like the editor and that interface, the whole process from a user standpoint, just continually improving. So kudos to you and the product development team for great work on that. And with that, I mean, you know, we have jam-packed this episode with I think a lot of useful stuff. I hope so.
Absolutely.
And Tom, so we want to thank you for joining us. And if you are not yet following, as our listener, if you're not yet following Tom Tate on Twitter, you can find him at TNRT. I'm so jealous of your four-character Twitter handle. Seriously, man.
I got lucky.
Yeah? You didn't hack someone or something?
No, I didn't have that one for a long time. For a while, my Twitter handle was actually at failed wordsmith. Because I was trying to be that struggling.
That's a pretty good one, actually, though.
And I just owned my title of being a failure. But then I shifted over to TNRT, and luckily it was available. So
that rocks, man.
Actually, I got to tell you, you are not actually a failed wordsmith, because you've had a lot of nice little phrases throughout the show.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
30 years in journalism, cool. And you're still evaluating. I mean, you just have to evaluate people based on their words.
Yes, never stop.
So, I love it.
Good stuff.
Well, listen, I would appreciate it if you guys would return the favor. I would love to have you guys on our podcast someday.
Oh, that'd be a blast. Absolutely.
We'd love to.
Yeah, if you can if you can tolerate three talking heads at one time, you know, we're there.
Or there might not be room for it.
Yeah, we might, since, you know, too many millennials on the same show might be a little much.
I think we could make it work. So I'll be in touch for sure.
Sounds
wonderful.
Good, man.
Thanks, Tom.
Hey, appreciate it, and we'll look forward to whatever may come of that.
Awesome. Yeah, sounds great.
Thanks for listening to the Grow the Dream Show. We invite you to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get connected to our growing community, add your comments, ask questions, and listen to the archives on the web at growthedream.com/show.